All right, you're listening to KRUU 100.1 FM, the voices of Fairfield, Iowa, and beyond. Grassroots, listener-supported community, powered and solar-powered radio, broadcasting live from the Cultural District here in sunny Fairfield, Iowa. And this is Writer's Voices with Monica and Caroline. I'm your host, Monica Hadley, and with me is my co-host and mother, Caroline Coburn.
Beautiful day.
And
beautiful
day. We are enduring the trials and travails of live radio with technical difficulties today. Our guest today has put in tremendous effort to try and call into a phone that for some reason isn't working. So we're MacGyvering it, and we'll see how it works.
Well, you know, I was having trouble with my phone at home too.
Really?
The other day. Yeah. I couldn't call out. Crazy.
All right. So who do we have today?
We have Michael Bidar, and he has written a very interesting book. It's a voyage of discovery of this gentleman who has diabetes, and he's searching for ways to improve his life and his health and everything, and it's really an amazing book.
And the title is Sweet Healing, A Whole Health Journey, Book One, a novel. And it is available locally here, if you're listening in Fairfield, at Revelations Bookstore. And in fact, Michael will be coming next week to do a reading on, I believe, July 8th. We'll talk a little bit more about that. So welcome to Writer's Voices, Michael.
Thank you, Monica and Caroline. It's great to be here. I'm excited to come to Fairfield. And I just want to say, I can hear Monica, well, I think it's your voice, pretty well. But when Caroline speaks, it's like it's very hard to hear you. So
okay, is this better?
All right, we're gonna move things around here, and okay, all right, now we should be better.
Okay, now is that better? Can you hear now? Can you
I'm
hear
glad
me?
To be on the show, and I look forward to talking with you about something I'm passionate about, and glad to be here.
So, Michael, have you been to Fairfield before?
I've spent one night there. I slept on a farm out sort of a mile down a dirt road away from Fairfield, which was just beautiful. So I saw the fireflies and the sunset, and I had all I could want.
And what brings you to Fairfield next week?
Basically, I found that on my 25-state trip through America, coming to Fairfield would be not only right on the track, but also a center of consciousness, healing, and living that I wanted to connect with. So,
great.
I'm traveling across the country because I feel like my message and the delivery in a novel is very timely for our health, sustainability, and longevity today.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that's for sure.
Well, a little more background on Michael. Michael Bidar is an AADP member and certified spiritual nutrition counselor. He investigates natural healing, provides wellness support through consulting, teaching, and film, and speaks at universities, hospitals, and conferences. What exactly is a spiritual nutrition counselor?
Well, if you take nutrition, we have a general idea that has something to do with food that we eat and how it goes into our body and works for us or doesn't work for us. And then a spiritual nutrition counselor or spiritual nutrition realizes that we're meeting the food as much as the food is entering us. So it's how you meet your food from a body, mind, and spirit level that is the field of spiritual nutrition.
I've heard of the concept sometimes that what we bring to the table, kind of in our own consciousness, maybe impacts health as much as the actual food that we're eating. Is that what you're
on an energetic level? So the food has its energy, caloric as well as solar energies and molecular energies, and we have ours. So what we bring to the table scientifically is going to assimilate energies with the food. So it starts with how we are, and then it moves to how we eat.
Mm.
You're right.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, in our culture, most of us do not eat well. We do not eat healthy. We think we're eating well, but we're not eating healthy. Is that a good statement?
Well, you're the one who I think I should hear mostly, but what I'm saying is, on a general mass level, we have a problem. We have a crisis that is resulting, and this is where I really like to focus, it's resulting, if you could look ahead to that, in lost years of life and lost quality of life with the people that we love the most, with our spouses and partners and friends and children. Especially the children grow up, and on average, if you have type 2 diabetes, which is an outcome mostly of our diet, we lose 11 years of life personally in terms of our lifespan, and then the quality of life is degraded. Then contrast that decline to a prevention and recovery lifestyle, where not only do you live those 11 years longer, but you get to pass on that wisdom of how you healed and how that impacted your community to your children. That's a massive contrast, and we have the choice in our fort.
Well, the story that you wrote here is, of course, the journey of one man, but also his whole family, as he confronts that he has diabetes and wonders how in the world he's going to manage, and he has an amputation, I mean, you know, which a lot of diabetics do. So it's it can touch a lot of people and their families, this book.
I'm so glad you took the time to explain that, because it's something that so many millions of people can relate to. And I wanted to create a book that lets people be emotionally related to the experience through the characters. But we, as human beings, learn through story. And there are millions of words written about nutrition and what to eat.
Mm-hmm.
And people, for some reason, don't translate that as much as they could into action. True cases of obesity and heart attack and diabetes may be starting to plateau, thank God. But the education still has more work to do. And the next step in education is actually narrative. So I wrote it, like you said, in fiction, featuring a man and a woman, a couple, and their family and extended community, all who live lives with the same meanings and values that everybody on every block in America has. And then when you realize that they can tap into their emotions, their fear, their sadness, their despair, their anger about maybe how their diagnosis has caught them off guard and they're not prepared for it, people can say, oh, I'm not alone. There is a path that some people have taken to very fulfilling outcomes from that risk and moved into a life-affirming and life-sustaining shift in their diet. And then there's suspense and engaging adventure along the way that keeps it, because it is, there's no greater drama in our life today than making profound personal changes. So it's great territory for a novel.
Now, Michael, why did you title it Sweet Healing?
That's a wonderful question. And it's basically a double entendre, at least, maybe triple. So of course, the word diabetes mellitus comes from the Latin root for sweet, mellitus.
Mm.
Comes from the Latin for sweet, because they diagnosed the condition through smelling and even sometimes tasting the urine and blood, to say, oh, this person has a high amount of sugar in their blood that isn't getting metabolized, which causes all kinds of inflammation and infection, neuropathy and degeneration. So the sweetness, the second meaning is that we are replacing the sweetness in our life, in our internal life, with overcompensation by sweetness in our food.
Mm.
And it's sold to us as a marketing and profit-making scam, but we replace the true sweetness inside with temporary sweetness in our outside, which is, food never was that way in nature, but it's been hybridized and genetically changed to be that sweet and then marketed to be attractive to children, and we get hooked. So the true sweetness is reversing that, putting the sweetness within above the sweetness from without. So the book has seven foundations, including nutrition, but also many other holistic foundations that the characters find provides the conditions for holistic sweetness. So I found in my own life, as a facilitator for 12 years, that every night that I helped somebody find that sweetness within and be able to turn their life around health-wise gave me gratitude that I almost cried myself asleep to, because I felt so sweet about seeing that person have peace and power back and then reach the goals they want, which is being there for their children. That's sweet. That's real sweet.
Well, I think when you said they get the power over their disease, that's sweet. That's very sweet. Because people, you know, like in the Gene in the book, he felt completely powerless and he just couldn't figure out what in the world he was going to do, how in the world he was going to manage, you know, and he wanted to live for his family, wanted to live for himself. So it was, but the neighbors that he met, that that's just amazing. The story of, is it Rima and her her healing from she had tuberculosis, I think it was, and you know, from a child, she was in a wheelchair and everything, and gosh, it was amazing. Mm-hmm. It really was. And that was through music. So you just never know, do you?
Right. You know, we can basically shift our lifestyle from any type of input. It can come through a person's revelation in music, a revelation in meditation, a revelation in family life, revelation in nature. Any type of experience can give you that impetus to begin looking where you haven't looked before, for sure.
Mm. Yeah, because, you know, once again, in this culture, we depend on medicine, we depend on medicines, and yeah, sometimes there's other things that might work better. But that, you know, that's the first reaction. I'll go to the doctor. Okay, what does he say? Gives me a prescription, you know? And I understand that. I do.
I do too. I have no judgment about that. That's some people's life course. I just want people to know about the drugless options that exist in a responsible way.
Right. Right. Well, this book clearly lays that out, and in a way that you can relate to it, because it's the characters are going through this. And you know, and it's quite nice, quite sweet.
Now, Michael, is there a reason from your own personal experience that you chose to focus on diabetes?
You know, my grandmother had it, so and that's how she passed away. So actually, yes, if in that era, in that place and time, she may have been given a different option. Things may have turned out differently for her. And I have reason to believe from the 12, 13 years of my adult career to see that there is another way. When I lived at the Tree of Life Center in Arizona, where I did my master's research, I would see people come in 7 days, 14, 21, 30 days from when they arrived. They would no longer be using their medications because the responsible physicians, naturalistic, holistic physicians at the Tree of Life would help them get off of them, and their blood sugars and all the readings would begin to come back to normal, and that could be sustained when they went home too. So my experience being a teacher at that center and a student there was my key personal catalyst for writing this novel in a way that people can relate to, because I know that there's a limit to the number of people who can go to the Tree of Life, and there's a few similar centers. It's limited for travel, for finances, for the proclivity of people to actually go and do that. But if you can read something in your own home and it's about things happening in a city like your own city, in a neighborhood like your own neighborhood, and with neighbors like your own neighbors, they're basically like you, you could be touched that much more closely. That was my personal impetus.
You know, Michael, I have a friend who is serving a life sentence in prison, and he was diagnosed with diabetes a few years ago and was very, understandably very upset about that. He was not at all overweight, but the diet in prison is very, an institutional diet is very difficult to to eat properly in that environment. And he was trying to control his blood sugar primarily with diet, and the prison physician got very angry at him for trying to do it that way. It's a very sad story, really.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. to just the fact that in our lives it's time to break out from our own prisons and find, you know, as long as we have our freedom, to find the types of professionals who are going to help you follow that inclination inside you to use food as medicine and medicine as food. That's what Hippocrates, the founder of modern medicine, said. Let food be thy medicine and medicine thy food.
Mm. Well, as you pointed out in the book, one of the characters said, you know, animals eat natural things and they don't seem to suffer as humans do. Of course, we don't know, I suppose, all the things that might happen to animals. But still, you know, in nature, there seems to be more health than in humankind. Is that true?
It seems to be that way. And metaphors, I mean, nature provides us with splendid examples.
Uh-huh.
That would be, I think, more emphasis on the local farm and
yes.
The wild herbs and the things that we can source locally, and if not locally, from reputable, what we call at my school, rainbow green live food cuisine. Rainbow green meaning that nature provides a myriad of colors, and those not only provide phytonutrients and vitamins unique to each color, but also provide an opportunity for us to live in our birthright of using our intuition on what to eat. Because the colors, when they're not too processed and refined and deadly cooked, they can actually provide clues to us for what we're hungry for and when, based on using our senses in response to the colors. So one thing that Dr. Cousins wrote was a book called Rainbow Green Live Food Cuisine to encourage that spiritual, intimate, and mindful relationship with food in its most natural state.
Mm.
That's what begins to be discovered amongst the characters in a fun, mysterious way.
Okay, hold on a second. I've got... All right, I'm trying to get rid of... We're using my cell phone as a backup here, and I've got a call coming in, but hopefully it will disappear.
You can try my cell if you want. Okay, these seven stones, the seven sacred practices, was very interesting because it's not just, you're not alone in the world and you're not alone in this situation and you have to depend on some other people. And it's, one of them is service to fellow human beings, which I thought was very interesting. And of course, that is in the book. Gene is helped by his friend Don and Don's wife, very, very much because they understand what he's going through, and so they want to help him. And some people are reluctant to approach someone who has a difficulty, a physical difficulty, because they don't want to appear to be pushy. But sometimes you have to be. Sometimes you have to be because people don't want to tell anyone how they feel, but you need to know how they feel.
Well, the part about service to fellow beings being in healing, very much so. That, in my training, that was always a part of what we provided, an opportunity for our clients to do, to provide, to give of service to others so that they can not only open their heart to their selflessness, but also create a resonance with others outside themselves so that you feel like you belong, you matter, and your body knows it. So your mind is connected to your body, and when you have a sense that you are important to others, it does send a message to yourself that your thriving matters in this community, in this ecosystem. So
yeah.
So it's absolutely part of healing. And mm-hmm. to your point about our reluctance to approach people, the more I've traveled now throughout the country, many people have come to the talks, and many of them have been in an immediate acute or chronic situation where they want to improve their health now, or someone they love. And the approaching without judgment, but concern and genuine attention, you know, what are you going through? You know, just the act of listening is the beginning of a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And from that relationship can open up more and more sharing, mostly by example and occasionally by the energy. You know, you can sense when someone's energy is requesting something that you have that you can offer them, and whether that's information or time together or support on different levels of support. You can sense it, and then there's an opening there once the relationship has begun. And it's really true that the unit of healing and the unit of change tends to be the group, small group. We don't go it alone, generally.
Right. Well, I know in our... Excuse me. I live in Mount Pleasant, Iowa, and right now they have a diabetes symposium going. The people that with type 1 and type 2 diabetes can join, and they can, you know, share and talk about and find out things. And so I think that's good. That's good.
You're listening to Writers' Voices with Monica and Caroline, and our guest today is Michael Bedar, author of Sweet Healing, A Whole Health Journey. Michael, you'll be in Fairfield, I believe it's July 8th at Revelations Bookstore. And what time is that?
7:30 p.m.
And will you be reading from the book?
I will be. I'll be holding a talk, reading from the book, and definitely opening it to a discussion of questions and comments.
Great. Well, would you like to read from the book some today for our audience?
I would, yes.
Wonderful.
Now, you did tell me that was a part of this interview.
Yes.
But, yeah.
I don't know if I have a copy right here. well, that's interesting.
Okay. another technical difficulty. Okay, well, why don't we talk a little bit about how and why you came to write this particular book, where you got the idea for the character, and how the characters developed for you.
Well, that's an interesting key. My past, you know, from my grandmother and witnessing, and then working at the Tree of Life, seeing the results, also helping produce. One of the things I had studied was storytelling in film, and I had produced a documentary, or co-produced, of a similar topic. Six people coming a long distance to learn to eat whole raw rainbow green cuisine, and that film did quite well, and then it made an impact. And but I still find that the people weren't going to learn in there physically and geographically, and there's just an appetite for adventure and good narratives. There's an appetite for stories and myth and folktale and new, you know, social, global, national narratives. So I felt like there was more to give. And so I did my master's thesis on what qualities of the human personality, of the mindset and attitude, are most conducive to people choosing to go a natural route with their health when facing risk or a crisis in their health, particularly inflammation and type 2 diabetes. So I was very interested in what the 108 questions would be. 200 people answered the survey with 108 questions, all about not only their health outcomes and their lifestyle choices and diet, but also their personality qualities. Things like what turned out to be the very most conducive personality qualities were proactivity, what we call agency in the psychometric field. The agent, being an impactful agent in your own life outcome. And secondly, was emotion. emotional vulnerability. So this is the ability to acknowledge what you're feeling and tend to discuss it with others a little bit. This quality was the quality that let people go from a knife or just kind of paralyzed by not knowing what's going on to feeling the information in their emotions, where they're sad, scared, angry, or even happy and whatever it may be in their life. The quality then lets them say, oh, here's where I am right now. Where else is there to go? That's the key from emotional maturity. So those two qualities, among others, which I will talk about Friday, led me to say, okay, I'm going to turn in my thesis that concludes these factors are the key emotional personality qualities in life for healing. My colleague, Mike Chait, actually, said to me, Michael, you've been here for years, you've facilitated many groups, you know the ups and downs and the pitfalls and potholes of the path of natural healing using this methodology. You helped make this documentary, and now you have this data from your thesis. You're in the perfect position to write it in a parable so people can really get the story. You'll reach 10,000 times more people. And that just really hit me, kind of like a lightning bolt. And that's when the characters began to come in. Mm-hmm. I just put together their composite of the hundreds of people that I've gotten to witness and work with. They're not any one family or not any one person that is a real person that I've worked with. It's a composite, and then I imagine the details. You know, what kind of town do they live in? What are their family relationships? What are their jobs and their ages and what are their interests and things like that? Those were imagined. The story is based on the research and the experience. Like the back of my hand, I was living and experiencing those healing patterns every day. So they got to be written out, and that's basically sure. There's things like the Seven Stones narrative became also a part from imagination. Mike Chait gave me some of those suggestions as well, and he's an author as well. So together, it all came into the novel.
Are there some individuals who that you have come in contact with through these centers that just can't do this? Can't do this holistic thing?
Absolutely. The answer is yes. And I don't hold them in any different light as a human being, because the last thing I want to do is create more stress, more judgment, more self-criticism in anybody. That's not what I want. So, and in fact, probably self-judgment and this type of pounding on yourself for what you may feel like you can or cannot do is probably more damaging than most do. So I just feel like what I see is that there is a key role for genetics, and there's a key role for individuality. Mm-hmm. No one thing is the same and right for everybody.
Right.
So I have a great deal of respect for people's individual paths. There is something to be said for the middle ground. There are people who say, oh, it's genetic for me. But the truth is, it's just that their parents and grandparents did the same food and lifestyles as you. And in this case, you're able to take advantage of this amazing quality of our genes called polymorphism, which is genes can express from the genotype to the phenotype in a variety of ways. Poly means many and morph means form. So you can have polymorphic expression of your genome into your phenotype, which can be basically, what the research in genetics shows, like Dr. Steven Spidler in University of California at Riverside, in about 21 days, all these gene switches that are off, you know, the gene switches, the genes that make the neurotransmitters, the genes that make the enzymes, the genes that make the proteins, the genes that make many of the important molecules in our body, can, including hormones, can be switched off and can be switched on. And it's the material inside the cellular fluid called, basically, are we nutritionally deficient or sufficient? Is there too much of a toxic load? And are we too stressed for those switches to switch back on like they're basically meant to be? And then you really turn around your genetic phenotype, how you're expressing. So I want people to know that possibility is very much there. It's a great field of epigenetics.
So there is nurture and there is nature in this whole thing, because we are product of how we were raised, of course, and how we were taught to, you know, how we were taught to approach life and how we were taught to eat, actually. One thing that I was interested in, does everything get replaced every 7 years? You said in the book, every 7 years, the body cells go through a complete replacement cycle. Is that true?
It is.
Oh, my gosh.
Now, there might be certain tissues where it varies. You know, it could be more years or less years. But because we're so diverse, even within our own body, we have bones and skin and muscles and so forth. But overall, it's true that our cells are constantly being replaced, constantly. You have cell death, and it's essential. I mean, programmed cell death gives thanks for all the cells in your body that are dying. Because basically what's dying is the oldest cell.
Uh-huh.
Especially when you give yourself nutrition so that the new cells come around and they are markedly fresher than the old cell. You want your new cells to be markedly, you know, born from an internal climate that makes the new cells truly newer and in a sense younger than the old ones.
Mm-hmm.
So when the old ones die, you're making room for the new. We want our old cells to die regularly.
Well, you know what? I never thought about that, but of course that I can see that's true. But you know, when you get to be my age, which is 81, there's a lot of I have a lot of baggage, so forth, surgeries and so forth in my past, and I realize now that all goes together to make me who I am, and make my body what it is. And so some of us have more to overcome than others. If you've never had any surgeries, because a body doesn't like to be cut, let's face it. And every time you have a surgery, it has to heal, and sometimes it doesn't completely heal, I think. Is that a possibility?
Yes.
Well, there definitely can be trauma from the past that affects you.
Yeah. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. Hey, Michael, I would like to try calling your line on the studio line. And so what I'm thinking, because we're live, we'll have Mom read a little bit from the book while we're doing that. And if it doesn't work, I'll call you back on the cell. But we're not getting as good of a vocal quality through the cell phone as I would like. So does that sound good?
That sounds good. Well, I'll be standing by.
Okay.
And I hope to see you and everybody at Revelation next Friday.
July 8th, yes, July 8th, 7:30, and we'll have you back on the line in just a moment.
Okay, I'm going to read.
I'm going to read
from the foreword here, the book, Sweet Healings, by Michael Bidar. We live in a culture that can easily trap us in malnutritious food and illness. Yet there always remains a spark of true nature in each person that can help one return to wellness and wholeness. For over 42 years, I have been in the medical practice, and for 23 of them, I have directed the Tree of Life Center U.S. in Patagonia, Arizona. At the Tree of Life, we offer holistic healing and spiritually active retreats, programs, and vacation experiences in a natural, vibrant environment. Michael Bidar has served us there as a meditation teacher and healing process facilitator. Here we have witnessed a steady stream of profound health transformations among our guests who have embraced the foundational principles and practices of whole health depicted in this novel. More than 300 million people worldwide suffer from diabetes, about 90% of these being type 2. By age 65, nearly 27% of those who grew up in the current Western culture of death receive this diagnosis. I refer to this pandemic situation with the more accurate term, chronic diabetes degenerative syndrome, a condition that engenders heart attacks, strokes, weakness, pain, crippling, and blindness, and that reduces lifespan by an average of 11 to 18 years. Collectively, that's a lot of lost time in which parents and elders could pass on values, love, and wisdom to their children and to their communities. Even if we're lucky enough to find out that lifestyle change can reverse disease and generate a recovery, actually transforming and healing can be a stumbling, unexpected, and sometimes awesome path. Inner Sweet Healing, a riveting, unforgettable allegory, which, along with my own book, There Is a Cure for Diabetes, second edition, offers a striking alternative to that losing battle, shining a light so readers can find their lost keys to natural health and life force recovery.
And thank you, Caroline, for reading from Sweet Healing. And now we have Michael back on the line.
Good. That was from the forward.
Welcome back, Michael.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's
really hearing
better.
You read the forward. That was very nice to hear a few words of that.
Oh, good. So, how long did you work on writing this book?
About 8 years in total, because I have to include the research, which began about 2007, 2008.
Wow. So that was from the time when the thought of doing writing, of presenting this information as an allegory, as a novel, first occurred, was about 2007, 2008?
Presenting it in actual nonfiction occurred in 2007, doing the research on what these qualities of people and relationships are that are
okay.
Their holistic healing. And then the idea to do it in the allegory form came 4 years ago.
Okay. And had you ever written fiction before?
I had never written any fiction. Well, no, I mean, I had written stories.
Okay.
I'd written screenplays before.
Oh, okay. Did you think of doing this as a script rather, as a screenplay rather than a novel?
Well, that's very inclusive in the overall plan at this point.
Mm.
These characters can very much come alive, as I would imagine you might agree, that they could be really vivid characters on a series.
Oh, yes, absolutely. This could very well adapt. Yeah. Yeah.
And Michael,
We noticed
that on the cover of the book, Sweet Healing, A Whole Health Journey, it says Book One.
Mm-hmm.
So what's your plan for Book Two?
Yeah, Book Two is in the writing now. Book Two has, the vision is that, as we alluded to earlier, that upon the elders realizing that they might be going on a track that's going to lessen their quality of life and their length of life, children are watching. Every generation after them is watching very carefully and being impacted hugely. So to the point of the grandchildren who grow up in the view and under the wing of these people that choose the natural wisdom route, now, these children are going to grow up in a world with very interesting choices and navigations in the world, too. So that's what Book Two is going to focus on.
Mm. Yeah, good.
Yeah, you know, one thing sometimes we forget when we think that, like, in our modern world, that we have a less healthy lifestyle than our forefathers, foremothers did. We sometimes forget we do live longer now. There are some advantages to the pharmaceutical realm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So the hard part, and whenever you're faced with an illness, is determining which of the many choices that you have are going to work best for you, and what works sometimes. You know, whenever there's something, anyone has a health problem, they get a zillion suggestions about this supplement or that diet or this exercise or that. And it's very hard sometimes to filter through all that and determine what is going to work for you. Michael, do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, as far as actually addressing people with going through that and filtering through, I would say that the key, I feel, is to have
the right amount of information. It can be too little or too much. Mm. The ability to know when you're processing it fairly well and you're actually able, like self-regulating of how well you're grokking what you're reading and then putting it into your bigger mind to sort of synergize that information versus we can get into this mode of either when there's too little and we're just taking it exactly word for word by what one other person says, mm-hmm. too much when we're actually not getting it. It's overwhelm. So when you feel like you have the power of your own synergizing of information, you are the sovereign one with the mind to really understand and choose. So I would say just monitor and regulate your own sense of having the power to synergize information. And if that's happening, you'll probably be able to filter your way and then use your, you know, to what will work for you. I wanted to say it in that way because the book doesn't give that much of prescriptive information. It's more the journey of knowing how to know what to do, I would say. The intuition part is important. And, of course, we don't want to overlook the power of our own gratitude. Our emotional state is tremendous in affecting our body.
Oh, absolutely.
Michael, do you want to share the seven stones, the seven sacred practices, and talk a little bit about what those are?
Well, that's a great segue from there, actually, So I almost named the book The Seven Sacred Stones.
That would have been good.
They form the spine of the mystery that the characters begin to unravel. So in the center, there's one large stone. It says The Seven Sacred Stones of Whole Health. And around the outside, I'm not talking about this because it's giving away the end, but the end is information and the journey is the book. So on these seven stones, one is food, water, and air for life force. That would include the rainbow green cuisine we talked about. Green is the basis because chlorophyll and the savory nature of leaves can provide us so much in vitamins. And then the rainbow because it brings in all these different phytonutrients and antioxidants. And that's where supplements would belong too, because sometimes well-applied supplements can be very helpful. And then water and air all fit in that same stone because you want to have quality physical input overall. We talked about service to fellow beings. That's that process of opening yourself up and resonating and really feeling like on a deep heart, emotional level, you matter. That's where service comes in for healing. I have physical and mental exercise. And for some people, just going from sedentary to walking is exercise.
Mm-hmm.
And then you could take it to the athletic level. You know, I'm a fan of, you know, gymnasium, recreational sports, swimming, hoops, mm-hmm. basketball, you know. And then probably the most refining level of health comes from physical dance or yoga, hatha yoga, or, you know, asanas, because it gets into places in the body that other exercises may not, and it can be very much personally catered to your needs physically, and it makes a mind-body connection as well.
Mm.
And for the mental exercise too, part again, some people with just pretty much a little bit blown out in oblivion, whether it's through television or just a habit of laziness, and that going from that to just reading and thinking about things and playing maybe mental board games or whatever is a step. And then further from that, I would say cultivating concentration as a mental exercise is probably the furthest expression of mental exercise. You know, and concentration on the things that you love, you know, integrating your passions with your concentration, the true mental exercise. Also around the circle of the seven stones is radiant joy, because a lot of things can give you joy. Even eating good food and service to others, they can all give you joy. But joy is its own quality. You know, laughter is the best medicine, it's always been said.
Yep.
So joy, laughter for no reason, it's an extremely healing situation. like, I'll paint the picture of this bodhisattva on the train, on the B train, as we call it, the video. This person starts laughing for no reason, and people start looking down the row, who's laughing? And then they all start laughing, and that's a very, that type of contagious joy is a very healing quality.
Mm-hmm.
Another one is a quiet mind, and that can come from the concentration, but it's also a chance to relax. You know, about 40% of our caloric consumption is in our brain.
Wow.
That can
I had no idea.
Energy. Yeah. And that can take from the amount of energy that can be available for your body to heal itself and detox itself and release. Mm. So the more you actually, like, stressing and fixating, you do liberate the body's vital force to work on your body and healing. So for some people, you know, people who are very active, it might be a little less than 40%. But we do, so a quiet mind physically brings more vitality to the body just by being present and calm inside the central nervous system, lets more energy flow out to the body. Plus, in the spaces between your thoughts, you can bring in new thoughts, like new vision, new image of your body, you know, a body that's loved and a body that deserves good care, new, versus the old thoughts, which may have said no, been more critical thoughts. So you can bring in thoughts that serve you in the spaces between your thoughts. And that's why in my training and at the Tree of Life and in my book, a quiet mind is a key factor and key foundation in healing. Let's see. Another one of the seven sacred stones is
energetics.
Hygiene. Natural hygiene. Yeah. I'll go to hygiene for a second.
Okay.
Because naturalistic hygiene lets you basically not take in poisons through your skin and your immediate environment. So, you know, using shampoo and toothbrush and toothpaste and cosmetics and creams and moisturizers and suntan lotions and all these soaps and shower filters that you would basically, if you put it on your skin, it's a good idea that you basically would be willing to eat it, because it's going to go into your skin.
Well, yeah, it's going to go into your bloodstream,
isn't
it?
That's actually really important. That's actually underappreciated. Even your clothing. Like, I personally, like, kind of break out and get tired. My clothing is like new store-bought clothing that's not been washed and isn't made from organic cotton, because it's a very pesticided crop, cotton.
Right.
So, yeah. So that's actually pretty important. And then energetics. To just know that we are energetic beings. That's why acupuncture can work. That's why so many of these forms of healing and hand touch and massage can be very therapeutic, because we are energetic beings on a sort of invisible level that it's hard to put that much into words, but it's existed for 10,000 years because there's something to that.
Mm.
So those are the seven stones that all get mysteriously appear and get not only decoded and understood, but integrated into their lives inside sweet healing.
Mm. You're listening to Writer's Voices with Monica and Caroline, and our guest today is Michael Bidar, author of Sweet Healing, A Whole Health Journey. He will be speaking at Revelations July 8th, that's a Friday evening, 7:30 p.m., 2016, just in case you're listening to a rebroadcast of this at some later date, or listening to the podcast off of writersvoices.com.
Listening Monday morning.
Yeah. So. Well, Monday morning, you'll still, if you're listening to our rebroadcast Monday morning, you'll still get, which is the 4th of July.
Yeah.
You'll still have time to make plans to go listen to Michael.
Yes.
And meet him in Fairfield, Iowa, if you're here. So, Michael, how did you publish Sweet Healing?
Well, I did what all the cool kids do, which is self-publish.
Yeah, I thought so.
And did you, what venue did you use for that?
I used the CreateSpace platform.
And that's, is that Amazon's?
It is.
Yes. And what was your experience like with that?
I did get assigned a second editor, which was good. And so I felt that they accepted my cover artwork, which is basically a painter named Leonid Akramov, and they felt that it was actually high quality. So there was a lot of agreement in going forward together. There wasn't a lot of pushback. I got that from my other editor gave me more constructive feedback. So I think it was a good starting point. I don't think I want to. I'll just say it was a good starting point, and I'm open to an agent and a publisher in my sequel.
It sounds like with CreateSpace, you're not totally on your own. You know, in the past, we've had authors who have self-published through Lightning Press, which you basically do everything and they just print the book, but they have no editorial. And they may have that too, but so with CreateSpace, do you have the option of engaging those services, or is that part of the package?
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, I got the package that had those services.
Okay,
and I'm glad I did.
Yeah.
So it was nice to have another logistical ally in how the book would look.
Absolutely. Yeah, I do like this, the painting that you have on the cover.
Too.
It's beautiful.
It's
Is it oil? Is it an oil painting?
Leonid Akramov. I believe so. It's, again, the painter's name is Leonid Akramov, and I found his work and loved it. I love the colors of it, and I'm asking for an arrangement where I could use it on the cover. So I believe it's oil, but you can find him online, and most of his paintings are about outdoor scenes of people walking in nature, and it's somewhat, it's very vivid strokes.
So it sounds like you're in the middle of a book tour?
Right in the middle of it, exactly. this phase began in Oregon, went swooping down through California in the Southwest. It's coming through the heartland. I've been here in the Heartland and Great Lakes area for the last couple of weeks, and it's going to continue on into the upper plains and out back to the Mountain West again.
Now, did you make all the arrangements yourself for where you were going to present and read?
I did, actually.
Wow, that must have been a lot of work.
Good. I had a I had a head start, I think, because of the times that I've worked with other authors on their tour. For example, I actually used to plan for Dr. Cousin's tours. So I've met a great many people in a similar field already.
Are you mostly reading at bookstores or at alternative health facilities or both?
Oh, it's a great mixture of that. Bookstores, Horizon bookstores, and Higher Self bookstores, and then with the health centers like here in Minneapolis, I just spoke at Holistic Gateway, and there'll be a lot more of those coming up. So, it's a good mixture.
What kind of response have you been getting at your events?
That's my favorite question. Responsive. Yeah, I mean, I look forward so much to the responses at the event because people have either already read it or they're coming because they've had it recommended to them or they read the synopsis or something. And hearing this message in person and getting to interact with them, when they hear it and they share what it's meant for them and the motivation or inspiration they've gotten, I just feel like that's the best day of my life.
And Michael, I saw on your author bio that you are the co-director of the East Bay Healing Collective. And is that in San Francisco?
It's in Berkeley, in the San
Berkeley?
Francisco Bay Area.
Okay.
And that's a great thing that I did not found it. I took on directorship of it about a year and a half ago. It's a space for people to come and receive healing work from not only our groups, but many other people leased the space. It's completely 100% dedicated to community level healers, and there are meditation groups inside it.
Well, that sounds wonderful, and we really are looking forward to having you here in Fairfield. I think you'll have a receptive audience here.
I'm looking forward to being there. Thank you.
Well, thank you. And despite our technical difficulties today, I think this went pretty well. And if you're listening to us on Friday afternoon, and if you missed part of this, do tune in again Monday morning, 8 a.m. for the rebroadcast. We hope to see as many of you as possible at Revelations next Friday. That's July 8th, 2016. And we'll be able to show Michael a Fairfield welcome.
Yes.
And Caroline, do you have some closing words of wisdom for us
yes,
today?
Yes, you know, in this book, Sweet Healing, A Whole Health Journey, this gentleman gets help from a lot of different people, and he has in his past gotten help and he didn't even realize it someplace. But you know, this is what I say. Remember that no one makes it alone. Have a grateful heart and be quick to acknowledge those who help you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. And thank you, Michael, for being with us today.
Beautiful speaking with you.
And stay tuned now if you're listening on Friday for Planet Erstwhile with James Moore. And see you next week on Writer's Voices. Writer's Voices with Monica and Caroline is a production of KRUULP 100.1 FM, produced by Monica Hadley and James Moore. Archives available on KRUUFM.com and writersvoices.com.